Hold it, Armand. Restart. Hold on.
And you are listening to BAI New York.
Okay, yeah, restart. Hold on. And go.
This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial in New York. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. We've been focusing on the nature of impulses over the last 2 days. Today we're going to focus as well, which has to do with why people do certain things, you know, that seem to be spontaneous without much forethought. We want to understand, how does a person get to be the kind of person who lives on impulse, while other people can live a life that's not such on impulse, you know, that kind of goes along more with what society needs. What we've learned is that people who have rough childhoods can't possibly make it through unless they do something with their minds to make to adapt. Rough childhood. A rough childhood if there's a lot of stress. A rough childhood if there's persistent fear. Think of the number of cultures out there today where people live with persistent fear. It's like there's no, it's like more and more, you know, all they do every day is feel frightened, and the people who live with them are frightened as well. Chronic stress or repeated traumas can result in a number of biological reactions that have to do with this persistent fear. And the persistent fear of a child can wear out parts of the brain, such as the hippocampus, which is involved in cognition and memory. It could interfere with the development of the subcortical and the limbic area as well of your brain. So, you know, people who very often don't have the intelligence that would be natural for them to have could be because they were frightened as a child. 2 weeks ago, we did programs on depression, and we made a good case for why living with depression is kind of difficult, because if you live with depression, you are starving your brain, and slowly you are dying on the inside. Well, the same is living with fear. Chronic stress from fear in some way kills off parts of the brain cells, and you lose it. You know, you begin to lose memories, you begin to lose things that, you know, perceptions, reactions. So one way that people live as children that leads to a state of impulse, being impulse-driven, is when they live with persistent fear. And another way is if they're over-aroused, you know. Children are hyper-aroused, and that happens a lot. I know children who have, if dad is not at home, if you're a young boy and dad's not at home and you're surrounded by women, you could be hyper-aroused all the time. You know, it could be a state of sexual arousal. It could be a state of being alert all the time. So two things, persistent fear and hyperarousal, can certainly work on a child's mind to make a child bent out of shape. Now, what do you do when you have this kind of stuff going on? Well, one thing people do, children do, is they dissociate. Dissociation, you'll all know it. It's like, you know, remember we have two things. You can either run or you could fight, right? Those are your two choices. If you get under stress, you're either going to face your enemy, take it on, and beat it up, or you're going to run away. Well, the third way you could be is you could freeze. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind, talking about how different how we all adapted in some way. Are you a runner? Are you a fighter? Or are you a freezer? Freezing is like dissociating, and that's what happens. You become motionless. You become compliant. It's like surrendering. And you kind of go along with whatever's there. And in a way, the dissociative person is not there. They're just not there. It's like leaving home with your mind, you know? And you're not there. So it's another way of creating a stress. It's another reaction that winds up with a child having to adapt later on. Now, what does a child do? A kid has to make it work for themselves. And very often what they do is they have automatic things that happen to them that are compensatory behaviors. Give you an example. Stealing. Self-mutilation. Anger, violence, drug abuse, eating, shopping, spending. All of these are impulses. And we've been talking about this. We talked about it yesterday. Today, I want to talk to you specifically about your impulses and what drives you. Eating could either be dieting, you know, binge eating. It could be anorexia. It could be bulimia. Or it could be overeating. That's one form. Drug abuse. Moving to any of the chemicals, you know. It's to free your own mind. To try to get your mind free in some way. Shopping, violence, anger, self-mutilation and stealing. All of these work. So let's start off with one of the more popular ones. Let's talk about shopping. We talked about shopping yesterday, and shopping seems like it's a thing you have every right to do. You know, but the world kind of has made it easy for you through credit cards to shop beyond your means. In fact, as I said, the credit card companies, they want you to shop beyond your means because they want you to pay 20% interest on the balance due. They do not want the person who pays off the credit card every week. They are fishing for, they are hoping for somebody who pays the minimal balance and keeps the credit card going by paying 20% interest. This is how they live. This is what the credit card companies do. They exploit the sickness. And the sickness is, I've got to do something to make myself feel good because I feel so terrible. Because I didn't have a good life as a child. I didn't get the love I needed as a kid. So let me make up for it. I'll go buy myself a present or two presents or three presents. I have a right to it. Sure, I can't afford it, but the hell with it. I'll declare bankruptcy. I'll buy this and then I'll buy that. I can't afford it. I'll pay it off in time. I'll worry about it tomorrow. Unfortunately, to the most oppressed people in the world, to the people who are the poorest people, are the highest spenders on credit card balances. Yes, it's a way of the poor keeping themselves enslaved. Because you're enslaved to the debtor, to the credit card company. In a funny way, buying money on credit cards is driving you into slavery. And driving yourself into slavery. You may as well be down on a cotton farm. You know, I mean, you're giving yourself over to the master, the guy with the credit card, and you're saying, I belong to you. I'll pay you your money every week. Yes, I'll never be able to catch up. I'll get back out there and I'll pick some more cotton, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to keep trying to pay you, and I'll just give you your minimum every week. And now I feel so bad, I have to go out and buy myself a new pair of Jimmy Choo shoes. Or I got to go out and I got to get myself new golf clubs. I got to get myself a new something, a new toy, a new CD player, a new computer. It's enslavement by the bosses, and we go along with it. A little earlier today, I was listening to some of the way that people get enslaved in society, and part of the way we enslave ourselves is credit card debt. I say, if we have the inner cities, rip up those credit cards, mail them right back, chop them in half and send them. Do not let them take that power over your poor mind, because your mind is starved, you see, and they're working with that starvation. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Not only are you starved, but you're starved to the point of impulse. You see, you gotta have it. You gotta have it. You gotta have a cure. If drugs were hard to find, there are certain drugs like heroin is difficult to find. It's difficult to find. It's because there's always a chance you could get arrested. It's not an easy drug to buy. Crack, on the other hand, was very easy to get. It was on every street corner. Marijuana was on every street corner. Alcohol is easy to get. So people would go for the easy to get drug substance because it's easy to get and it's going to take me on impulse. I'm going to be able to get out of my mind. So shopping is something we have to look at. We have to be concerned about it. We have to be concerned about the need to look good, the impulse to fortify ourselves by enslaving ourselves, by selling ourselves into slavery, my friends. And what I want to do by being this aggressive with my words is to try to change your mind about who's got the power. Because, you know, people feel, if they're spenders, that they have the power. I can buy anything I want. But it is the illusion of having power that enslaves you to the credit card company. We're going to give you an illusion that you have power. Come over here, sign your name, and we'll own your blood. We'll be able to tell you that if you go bankrupt, your wife and your children are going to be responsible for it. Sign on the dotted line, which is some of the new contracts they have out there. So what I want to do is change your mind. It's not your power. You have no power at all when you're spending over your limits. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. One of the ways of getting you free is to not be creating this kind of stuff for yourself, creating the kind of stuff that you do when you think you have power. Let's talk about stealing. Let's talk about theft. Now, I know you think I'm going to say stealing is bad. I don't know if stealing is bad. Stealing is a funny thing. Because at IBM, they have a pilfering factor, which they build in. At every delicatessen, at every restaurant, there's a stealing factor, which are, we go 0.4%. Somebody's going to steal our pencils, our pads, and our employees are going to steal pencils and pads and pens and take them with us. And we know that. So we're going to lower everybody's salary by some tiny amount to make up for all this stealing. Of course they do. Of course. What your brother steals, you pay for. Of course. What you steal, your brother pays for. But we want you to steal. Because if you steal, then we rob your mind. If you steal from us, then we own you because you feel shameful. You see, it's one of the ways of possessing people. Mein Kampf, Adolf Hitler in Mein Kampf, put out a specific paragraph about how to let people steal from you. And he would recommend that people will if people steal from you small things, then you will own them. I remember EST, took this learning and put it into force when they would bring people to seminars, and they would have these very fancy pens. And these pens that you would have, and they were nice pens, they were good pens, they were click pens, and they would ask you to write your name and address, and everybody would steal the pen. But Est knew, if you stole from me, I own you. If you steal from me, I own you. I know a man who's a wealthy man who brings his car in for repair. He knows exactly where he gets overcharged. He goes to the places where he gets overcharged because he says, you've got to be kidding me. They overcharge me by 10% and they give me 100% better service because they're guilty. So stealing is another form of enslavement. But we think it's our power. You know, we think, oh my God, if I steal that record and I throw it in my jacket or I take that food and put it in my pocket or I get that candy bar and put it away, I'm beating them. Unfortunately, our society lives on exploitation of the impulses of the masses as a way of impoverishing the masses and keeping them poor and enslaved. Yes, my friends, even drug abuse. I mean, clearly, you know, we think we're going to fight drug abuse. We've never been effective in fighting drug abuse because we don't want to be effective in fighting drug abuse. We want you addicted. Why do you think we give you so many prescripted drugs? Right? We give you the drugs that you could take, your Valium or your Xanax, and we'll give you a prescription for those, and that's one, right? And then we'll give you something like sleeping pills, which are known to take away your memory and your thinking process, right, and inhibit that. Then we'll give you antidepressants, which will take away your sexuality, and we'll warn you that if you take away the depressants, we're going to own you. You're going to get depressed. We're going to make you dependent on our drugs. So we don't want you to become undepressed, says whoever is in charge. We want you to buy our drugs and stay the way you are and stay dependent on us. Drug abuse is part of society. It's part of what enslaves people. Just think about it. Think about it. I remember going to Harlem just recently, and I was walking around Harlem where there's a very, very high unemployment rate among adult blacks. Right? Adult men in Harlem, there's like a 50% unemployment rate or something like that. And I'm looking and I'm seeing all around me, I see drug abuse. You know, I see looking to do something quick, a quick theft or something like that. And I'm looking at the fellas around me and I'm saying, this is exactly the way they want it to be. They want you to be stuck where you are, doing what you're doing. Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. So impulses are an adaptation that favor those in charge. Think about impulse buying. You go to a store, you go to a grocery store. What do they have at the counter? On your checkout line, they have these candies and things that you buy on impulse. Well, I think I'll have a candy bar. Some of you even steal the candy bars. That's built into the system. The girl behind the counter gets a little less salary because you steal the candy bars. Right? Tiny bit. Maybe one thousandth of a penny. But everybody has to pay for it. So if that impulse item is there, that's exactly how we want you to do it. We want you to grab it to make you think it's going to make you feel better. We want you to grab it. We're going to put the things in red boxes. We're going to make them big boxes with big empty spaces on the inside. We're going to have it bright colored so you'll buy it, so you think it'll be your salvation. Because the impulse is what we live on. So it seems clear that we damaged children, who didn't get what we needed in childhood, have potential enslavement by going along with the system that says live on impulse. And it seems clear to me that one of the things you want to get over in your life is your impulses, because it don't serve you. It serves them. It keeps them in charge. And I want you in charge. This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. A little stronger in my judgments than usual. But when I see it, when I look around me and I see what's happening to people as a result of these hidden programs, especially the credit cards, it just kills me. I want to go to people and I say, oh, please, please, please tear up that card. Please get rid of it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't go further and further in debt. Please. Sure, you're going to get away with it one time. The credit card company will disappear and then they'll, you know, they won't even... It's going to happen again. And it makes you feel terrible. It makes you feel bad on the inside. I want you to feel good on the inside. The positive mind. Telephone number here, 212-209-2900. It's 212-209-2900. We're taking your calls today, talking about you and your impulses and what you could do about them. I do not come from a general nutrition approach or an herbal approach. I come from a psychotherapy approach. I'm trained in psychology, been working professionally in the field for 30-some-odd years, seen everything, seen everybody in every shape and every form. A lot of times people come to me, and they come to me for a one-time consultation, and in that one time, they feel so shameful because of how bent they feel. And I understand it. I've been there. I wish you could all understand what I understand about people. I wish you could have my perception of people as being just people, folks who are trying to get by. They're trying to get by from the damage that was back then. And I know it sounds like I'm blaming mamas and papas, but I'm not. Because they had their tough stuff, too. 212-209-2900. Let's hear from you. Let's see what you have to say. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. This is Ralph.
Hello, Ralph.
How are you?
How did you get through?
First call, instantaneous. It's just karma, you know?
It's amazing.
Yeah. My question is, as far as infidelity in a relationship, when you were talking about stealing, if the stealing was in the trust and the stealing was in the relationship, is there also the component of the victim having now ownership?
It's a complex question. Could you kind of turn it into an easy, simple question?
Well, where the trust is stolen out of the relationship because of the change in the relationship now, where there's a person that knows that they've been violated and a person that is, so to speak, a known violator, does the person that was violated sort of have the upper hand in that way? Like, in other words, is it almost like you now own and control the other person's feelings?
Well, in a way, that's true. You know, Ralph, I mean, if you think about it, let's say a man has his wife and his wife cheats on him in some way, and then she tries to make some kind of, she feels guilty, and he's in a way, you know, going to exploit how guilty she feels in some way. And he does have some power in that area, but the whole power exchange is ridiculous because the real thing that's going on is two people trying to love each other. You see, somebody who is with somebody else and they can't make it work, they try to make it work somehow. And sometimes they follow impulses and they do something else. But I think everybody's trying to work it out in some way just to be at peace inside themselves. However they could do it, you know? And sometimes if, you know, let's say she didn't cheat. Let's say she was an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And she got over her alcoholism. Would you have the same power?
Well, then I guess the question would be, in the case of where it was infidelity, is it the better person in the victim to give up that control and willingly give it up and just say, you know what, even though you stole, I'm learning and going to adopt a position of forgiveness.
Yeah, that makes an awful lot of sense.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're really asking a question. I think you're making a statement. I think the statement is accurate, it's concise, and it's brilliant.
Thank you, Armand.
Hey, Ralph, nice to hear your voice.
Nice to hear your voice, too, Armand.
Okay, I'll speak to you again.
See ya. Bye.
212-209-2900. Ralph has a hobby. Ralph's hobby is carving wood. And I know that because he made me the first ever, which is sitting right here in our studio, drumstick holder. It's a thing. It actually is a carving, a beautiful carving, and it holds my drumsticks from when I was a drummer. And there they are, sitting right there. Beautiful thing. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand. My name's Scott. I'm from Fairfield. How are you?
Are you Scott?
Yep.
Hello, Scott.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
All right, I had a question about impulse and desire versus impulse versus necessity, and just where you think people need to draw the line.
Well, ask me specifically. Get specific about yourself.
I guess I'd like to use your example of stealing. I mean, obviously you can steal or you can take. I mean, you can steal out of desire.
Okay, let me ask you something, okay? When I was a kid, I used to steal a lot. Did you steal?
I have, yes.
Yeah, what did you steal?
As a kid, I used to steal candy bars.
What else?
Bike parts for my bike.
Parts for the bike, what else?
Yeah. Skateboards.
Skateboards?
Everything, just ride them right out of the store.
What else?
I don't know, just stuff like that when I was a kid.
Anything you felt like taking?
How about
records? Did you put records and CDs and things like that?
Nah, I was always too smart for that. You know, they have the security codes on those.
They have security codes on it, but you could get a skateboard. You could get on a skateboard, and you could ride it right out of the store.
Why not?
Well,
no one's
going
to say anything to you.
There's the question. Why not? What is the feeling when you take a skateboard?
I have something to ride.
Yeah, I know, but what's the feeling? That's the logic. Do you feel shameful?
I don't know if you do.
That's right. You see, nobody feels shameful when they steal. Everybody thinks about it. You know, we think about Winona Ryder and we think about people who steal things. They don't feel shameful. They feel powerful. When you're scooting on your way out with that skateboard, you know, if you got your skateboard, you got some bicycle parts and you got some candy in your other pocket and you're on your way sailing out, you feel kind of justified.
Right.
You kind of feel like, I'm free. This is mine.
I think a lot of it depends on how you look about universal consequence, too. You know?
That's right. There is no universal consequence.
Exactly.
And that's...
Sorry.
No, go ahead. You go.
I was just like that. Like that whole concept is just, you know, it's relative to, you know, the host.
Now, Scott, did you ever steal from your mother?
I probably have, but not like money. Maybe just stuff around the house that she wouldn't let me have. Maybe.
Yes. Yeah, so you'd take it. Did you ever steal from your father? Did you ever take money from your dad?
No.
No. Why wouldn't you take money from him?
Real consequence.
That's right. Real consequence is the big word here.
Right.
People who steal don't face real consequences. They don't feel like they feel, you know, steal small.
Right.
Steal big and get caught, you know, right. And you don't have a lawyer, and you wind up filling up the jails.
Right.
But you steal small. I was with somebody today who said, I was 14 years old, I used to steal everywhere, and I knew they couldn't do anything to me because I was 14.
Right. And you steal from stores because, you know, it's a store, it's
like
corporate
it's a thing.
It's not your father, it's not your neighbor.
And you don't think to yourself that the person who works behind the counter, it's a store, and I'm not doing this to shame you, but
right.
You don't think that they can't pay a salary decent enough to the person who works behind the counter because they have to make up for the stealing that goes on, so they
right.
have to reduce the salary. We don't think in those terms. We just think, well, I was deprived as a kid, so I want to get mine now.
Right.
And that's the way you feel. You feel like there's kind of an impoverishment.
Right.
That you're going to make up for.
And when it comes to necessity, I feel like you can justify that, at least to yourself. You know, you might not be able to justify it to somebody else, but in your own mind, you could say, hey, I needed that. This was something I could not live without. This was not a want. This was not a desire.
It's a need, right? And I can't afford it. Well, Scott,
right.
Let me ask you something. Are you married?
Not.
Okay, not.
In a relationship.
What?
In a relationship.
In a relationship. You ever think of the fact that you might have this relationship, you might get married, and you might have a baby?
Yes, I do.
Here's a question for you. Imagine you get a baby boy, and the mm-hmm. baby boy becomes adamant, faces mm-hmm. you down. He's
right.
5 years old, and he says, I'm not going to do what you say. I'm not going to do it. I hate you. Do you think you'd be able to stop yourself from slapping him?
I don't know. That's a hard question.
It is a hard question, isn't it? Can you imagine justifying yourself?
I created that, though.
How did you create it?
Well, if it's my son, you know, I guess I would have to use the logic of I made that, so I'm kind of, in some way, you know, I'm deserving that, or like I made that happen to myself.
So you would be taking.
I asked for it.
You would be taking responsibility for it, but your hand is still there, and if he keeps coming after you,
right.
you wonder, am I going to be able to control it?
Right.
Which every parent wonders.
Right.
Every parent, before they have a child, wonder, am I going to be able to control my impulses for my children's sake? And I don't
what?
Know, when you were growing up, did your parents have trouble inhibiting their impulses?
I don't think so. I think my parents were very, very controlled. They, you know, I was hit as a child, but it was only when it was that above and beyond level of they weren't trying to just explain to me the difference between right and wrong. Like, I had really disrespected somebody or done something that had to be like, hey, snap back to reality. What are you doing?
Scott, I'm going to tell you a secret.
Yep.
There's never a right time to hit a child.
Right.
There's never an okay time. They're just kids.
Mm-hmm. You know, well, I'm talking like 15,
yeah, I'm talking about
16.
Yeah, I'm talking about real defiant 15, 16, still
right.
never a right time to hit a kid.
Even if the kid hit first?
Well, that's a different story. You may have to defend yourself. You're an interesting guy. Scott, thank you very much for calling in. We're going to have to take a break. And when we come back, we'll be taking more of your calls. Thank you, Scott. This is Armand DeMille. We'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. We're going to be playing some special music today. That's a Brandenburg Concerto number 5 in D major, and it is Benjamin Britten, the English Chamber Orchestra. It's amazing, with Neville Mariner. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Padre Mine. That's Johann Sebastian Bach, by the way. And when you listen to the Brandenburg Concerto, you can hear the influence of Vivaldi, which is always kind of interesting, you know? Listen in again. We're going to do this one more time. Listen. Hear Vivaldi plus Bach. Hear it? Right there. So if you want spring music, get the Brandenburg Concerto and put it on and you'll spring to life. Pretty stuff. This is Armand DeMille with you at the classical music station of WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial. We are classical. It's not classical music, but we are classical because we've been with you for so many years. And we've been here as the radio station of the people. A radio station that kind of is funded by the people. And for the people, by the people, and will not perish. Will not perish, because we're here to serve you. And this program, The Positive Mind, is meant to bring you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life by understanding folks. We want you to understand. We want you to be able to love everybody, which doesn't mean schmooze them. It doesn't mean hold them and kiss them and hug them and all that stuff. It is not that stuff. It doesn't mean buying flowers for everybody. It means understand and care in all their variations. And some of the variations are very funny. Some of those variations really get in your face. I spoke to a lady the other day who was talking about how she and her friends are out to kill the deer because the deer are getting into her vegetable garden up in Maine. And they've organized a poison the deer group. You know what I mean? Bambi. Well, Bambi seems to drum, they're overpopulated because of hunting and stuff like that. Now you look at this person and you wonder about her and her garden. And she and her garden, she loves her garden. She loves to grow her fresh vegetables. She loves to be able to do her righteous life, except she can't do it because the deer get in the way. So she wants to poison the deer. I have to love that. I have to find a way in my heart to say to this woman, I understand you. I understand how frustrated you must feel. I understand how I could judge you right and left. Except when I think of the fact that you're somebody who went up there to try to grow your own produce for you and your family so you know there would be some food that is absolutely healthy. You know, you knew there was something. You're right by a freshwater stream. And here it is. You've got your carrots and your celery and your cucumbers and your sprouts, and you're ready to put them together and make great juices and great salads for you and your kids. And you go out there in the morning and there's nothing left because of the deer. Of course, in your frustration, you're going to think of something like kill the deer. I wouldn't, you know, but I'm not that kind of person. 212-209-2900. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to love a person who slaps a child. Hey, you slap a child in front of me, I may break your arm. You know, I might. I may grab you so quick, I'll shatter your wrist. Because I'm going to stop you. But I'm going to understand your need to do it. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi there.
My name is Marion, and I'm from New Jersey.
Hello, Marion.
Actually, I wanted to talk about the. I wanted you to speak about the overeating part. With problem childhoods, and it's not stealing necessarily. I never stole much of anything, but. As I've gotten older, overeating seems to be more of a problem.
Well, you know, and have you dieted a great deal in your life?
Yes, I have.
Boy, I tell you, Roberta Maria Atti had quite a perspective on this. She said, those of us who have spent our lives dieting and fasting and trying everything, vegetable juice fasts, Gary Null fasts.
I've done that.
Majid Ali fasts, green juice fasts, all these things. She says, what happens is you starve your body. When your body is starving in an attempt to lose weight, your body is waiting to get it some food again. It's like when you are starving. Now, as a kid, what this says is as a child, you were also starved. You were starved either emotionally, nutritionally, or physically starved. Did you feel starved for affection when you were a kid?
Yes.
Yeah. What form of affection didn't you have? Did you have a mother who held you?
Not so much.
Uh-huh. So what were you missing as a kid?
Well, I guess really that parental connection.
Yeah.
You know, the ability to you know, talk with close family.
To be able to be part of and talk with close family and to feel like you belong to something.
Right.
In some way. So you starved. So you go out there and you look for nurturance in any way you can. Now, let me ask you something. What's your best fat food? What's the food that you eat that you like the most but is the worst for you?
it's the worst for me. That's
well, is it like macaroni and cheese?
No, lately I've been making a lot of garlic shrimp.
Garlic shrimp in olive oil, right?
Yes.
So what is it that makes a lot of, besides keeping the neighbors away, what is it that the garlic shrimp does? It puts on a lot of weight in the form of the oils that you eat?
Yes. I mean, I think the oil is not something I should, use too much of. And I think it's, there's too much oil for me in there. But it's delicious and
I
like it.
And you love it. And when you're sitting at home alone, what are you likely to do when you're eating the hugest amount of garlic shrimp? I know you're not talking to somebody because
your breath would be a disaster, right?
Although you don't have to have your breath be a disaster because, you could eat parsley.
That's true. Or I could eat garlic shrimp with someone else and it wouldn't really matter,
I don't think so much. That's right. Both of you eat garlic shrimp. I understand. So, but what is your behavior that you do the most when you're eating a bowl full of garlic shrimp?
Watch television? I'm watching a movie probably or, some TV program more than likely.
Are you ever likely to plan to get yourself a bowl of garlic shrimp and go sit in front of the TV and watch a movie and it's a plan? Do you ever do that? Do you ever have that plan? I'm going to go home and turn on a movie and eat some garlic shrimp and sit down and watch it.
I mean, I'll have the garlic shrimp. I'm going to go home. I'm going to make some garlic shrimp. And when I think that, I know that I'll be wind up in front of the television and watching a movie after watching something after I've prepared it.
Okay, now not to push this too far, but I'm really going to do it. I'm saying, let's say you had a husband named Garlic Shrimp.
I had a husband named Garlic Shrimp?
Yeah, let's say that this was your relationship. You went home, and what are you going to do? I'm going to take Garlic Shrimp, and we're going to watch a movie together tonight. Like, if his name was Garlic and his last name was Shrimp, that would be perfectly all right. The world would accept it, and they'd say, there you are, having a relationship with Garlic Shrimp. Nothing wrong with that. Because, in effect, what happens is the food becomes your relationship.
Okay.
Doesn't it?
All right. That makes sense, really.
And, not to have it is to feel love-starved.
Mm-hmm.
Love-starved. Mm-hmm. Now, what could you have in place of garlic shrimp that's better for you but disgusting? That you would just, it's almost like you'd rather not eat.
Ooh.
Boiled tofu.
Yeah, boiled tofu. Okay, boiled tofu.
You know what I mean? So there it is. You can either have garlic shrimp or boiled tofu. Little wonder that it's not going to make you feel at peace.
Right.
But here's the problem. The problem is the addiction. The problem is, once again, the blind belief that we've got it in our own hands, that it's our kind of power. So I fully understand, starved in childhood means starved as an adult. And somehow we got to meet that part of you that needed the love when you were little. And we got to greet it. We got to find it. We got to hold that kid inside you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Have you got anybody you're working with who's helping you?
Yes, actually I do. Actually I do, yes. And we are working on it. But I just wanted to call in and, I just wanted to call in.
Marion, I am so glad you did call in. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Next time you sit down with your garlic shrimp and you look at the TV, make a nod to me.
Okay, I will.
Nice to talk to you.
All right, nice talking to you. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. Armand DeMille. So that's what happens with every one of our things. Cigarettes. An extensive relationship with cigarettes. You talk about cigarettes and you talk about impulses. Tell somebody who is a smoker that by tomorrow they're going to stop smoking and watch what happens. They suddenly smoke like 20 cigarettes because the inside grabs and it says, wait a minute, you're going to take me away. I'm your relationship. I'm the person you love. Don't get rid of me. Don't get rid of me. Don't get rid of me. It becomes our relationship. Part of our impulses is to feed ourselves with the love we need through some symbolic means. Spending becomes a way of getting ourselves loved. Spending, even anger, is an attempt to get loved. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Alice. I also have an overeating issue. It's a lot worse than garlic shrimp. It involves binge eating of, you know, gallons of ice cream at a time, dozens of donuts at a time, things like that. And this has been going on since my teenage years. I'm in my 40s now, and I do have a 2.5-year-old daughter. And it's come to the point where I'm not grossly overweight because I've always been very active, but the weight I do have is clearly affecting my health now, to the point that some doctors have said, listen, you know, you need to lose the weight because you're gonna get into trouble as the years go by. And I really need to look at this issue a lot more closely as to why I'm doing this. But one of the doctors that I'm seeing said to me, listen, it's clearly a compulsion, and he's right away making this dopamine connection, and you hear a lot about it. And I was wondering if you could just speak to impulse, it as distinct from compulsion. And of course, they want to medicate you right away, and they talk about the people that are, you know, Parkinson's, anti-Parkinson's medications are showing compulsive behaviors. Gambling comes out in people taking those medications, and they're talking about, listen, you know, you have the compulsion, we can put you on something that, like, counters that, and, you know, you have to be kind to yourself, because it's not about that you're just overeating, it's about you're kind of wired that way, and they, you know, the drugs are going to help you, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm hearing you say, listen, that's the medical profession's answer. They want to put you on drugs and get you to have another problem than you already started with. So if you could kind of speak to all that, and I know you're probably going to talk about therapy and getting to the root of why you're overeating, and I can tell you in my life...
I've never seen that work, Alice. I've never seen therapy work for that. No, I don't think therapy works. I don't think medication works. I don't think there's a guy in New York. His name is Lou Aronne, A-R-O-N-N-E. He is the ultimate fat specialist in the medical world. He's a guy, I know him, and I know he does every medication possible. He gives people drug after drug after drug after drug, helping them lose weight. And what happens historically is people will lose weight through any of his methods, which will be any one of 100 different pills, and then they gain it back. So the idea of the binging is, according to Roberta Atti, and I would speak to her about it if I were you, she says your body is saying it's starved. And it's getting you to eat all this food because it feels starved. And it's looking for something that you don't seem to be able to get. You're in the general direction of the food between the ice cream and the donuts. But it's not going to the point where it's satiating this part of you that feels starved. So you're eating all the food, which should make you feel satisfied. But it doesn't make you feel satisfied because it's not going to the right spot. And I don't know exactly how to work it. I don't know exactly what you could do about it. I know there's enough psychological, behavioral, and medical things you can do. I just think the main thing to get under control is to try to get the body under control in some way. And I would always start nutritionally. I would say, get in there to get your body healthy, regardless of the weight. Get in there to get yourself to get the right juices, the right stuff so that your body is oxygenated. I think Majid Ali, I think that kind of stuff that he does, I think what Roberta Atti does, I think that kind of stuff will lead you in a direction that may free you from the part of you that just can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. All the other stuff, like you, I've seen it not work.
Yeah.
You know, it's all a good idea. And if it does work, it works for a short period of time.
You don't think, like, the self-esteem issues, you know, like, I'm sure there's something there, like, as you were speaking to the last caller, you know, search for what it was. I mean, maybe you'll never find the answer to that, and you'll just be searching, and therapists, you can go 3 times a week, and you still don't get to it.
Alice,
so.
Who loves you? Tell me who loves you.
Yeah, I...
Tell me who.
You know, I my close friends, I guess, my husband.
Now, wait, my close friends, I guess.
Yeah,
does your husband know who you are?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Do your close friends really know who you are?
Maybe.
You see, here's the barrier. The one thing about a lot of weight, for many people, it means you can't feel loved. Not that people don't love you, but you can't feel loved. If we had to interrupt anything, we would try to find that little doorway into your heart that takes the love that's out there and sends it into that doorway and says to you, you are loved. But you see, you can't feel loved. And nobody knows you.
And I think don't. That's true.
Yeah, so now here's what you find in a therapist. If you had a real therapist, and these are rare, these are very, very rare. I don't know of many in the world, on the planet. I search everywhere to find them, you know, so I could work with them. You know, they're so rare. You find therapists who know all about what to do. They know behavior modification, Gestalt therapy, everything. They know all the tools. But if you find a real therapist, the therapist knows you.
I get it.
And you get the feeling that they know you, and they get it, and they're not judging you, and you could feel it. You could feel, oh my God, this person knows me from the inside. Not this person judges me, not this person thinks I'm sick. Mm-hmm. This person walks with me in the crawl space. You know?
How do you find one? Like that.
They're hard to come by. I'm sure you've seen enough. Just trust your judgment. If you feel like you've got one who's not like that, stop with that one and go find another. You know? But that's what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody. And it's a rare quality. A rare quality because that therapist has to be okay with themselves. You know, a lot of people who go into the field of psychotherapy do it as a business. They do it as a thing to do because they want to feel powerful, but their hearts aren't open.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying to you, Alice, is the thing that you want to work on is how, get this, how to feel loved. Not how to get love, how to feel love. You need to find the button that opens the chute, you know, the doorway, the chute, that sends the love that's out there down to your heart where you could feel it. Because once you feel it, you're going to warm up all over.
And isn't it true that you have to love yourself
no,
first? Right?
Absolutely no, absolutely not. Forget
it's
that.
Not?
No, one of us. One of the silly things that people like to say. You have to love yourself before you can love anybody else. I know dozens of people who love other people and don't love themselves. Don't you?
I guess, if I think about it.
You don't have to love yourself. But you might want to take yourself out to, you know, to the movies. You might want to be nice to yourself. But there are some people who are so good at loving other people, and they don't love themselves at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're really good at taking care of people and loving other people. I know that, too. So, I thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
My pleasure, Alice. Bye. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take one more call because next week, I expect to do some interesting, intriguing studies on adolescence. And the adolescent effect on you, you know, how all of you out there, most of you are still adolescents. Most of us don't want to grow up, you know. We're not children. We're caught in the middle. Well, Stacy Nunez, N-U-N-E-Z, is going to be with us on Tuesday. And we're going to be talking about aspects. She's a specialist in working with adolescent problems and families who've got adolescents in it. So I want to get some information from her. She's a great social worker therapist. So I'll have her on Tuesday. Be sure to tune in. Let's get that last call in here. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. This is Leora.
Hello, Leora. What a way to end the show. Hi there.
Yeah, let me shut it down. Very, very quickly. I smoked 3 packs a day and 10 cups of black coffee way back in 69. I was told I had to have a serious operation, and I felt it as a mutilation. I was sent to somebody that told me in a year, if you give up the cigarettes and coffee, the problem will be solved. I made a decision because I said I will do anything not to be mutilated. I started the program. I took my pack of carton cigarettes, threw it away. I didn't have one withdrawal symptom.
Amazing. So the time.
And I
know.
So the point is, but you know, the thing is, I said I will do anything, and that little girl inside that needed that little Leora. But when I said it, something happened to everything.
I got you, Leora. Thank you for calling in. We have to be going. It does happen like that sometimes. Sometimes you're just ready. The moment is just ripe. And you can make a change because you're ready for it. Because whatever you've been hunting for all your life, you found. If you want a copy of today's program, you can call 212-757-4488. That's calling my office. Or you could look on the website, thepositivemind.com. Press the button, you can get all the archives for free.